Today's show is brought to you by KickUp. KickUp helps leaders ask the right questions to get actionable data, visualize information to guide effective next steps, and track teacher growth over time. Learn more at kickup.co. This fall's top conference for educators and leaders is the What Great Educators Do Differently Conference. It'll be held October 14th and 15th in beautiful Kansas City, Missouri. See speakers like Jeff Zoell, Ken Williams, and Lavana Roth, all past guests here on the show. Register today at WGEDD.com.
Welcome to the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast, where school leaders go to find inspiration and learn world-class strategies from top influencers in education. Better Leaders, Better Schools was created by Daniel Bauer.
I really enjoyed working with today's guest, Angus Nelson. You'll hear his bio as I introduce him, but we go deep into leadership, talking about what I found interesting. He basically uses the gradual release of responsibility to model leadership in his organizations. And I find that fascinating because we use that in our industry. We talk about how to become more self-aware, how today is the only day that's actually yours, how life is a paradox, and would you rather be a tourist or engage? All great questions that we should ask, all great content that you're going to enjoy in today's episode. Thank you so much for listening. Well, Better Leaders, I am excited to be here today with Angus Nelson. He works with executives of the world's largest companies as a speaker, coach, and facilitator. He's spoken at corporate headquarters for Walmart, Whole Foods, Coke, BMW, and others. Hosts an Inc.com top 20 business podcast called Up in Your Business, and has been featured on AOL.com, Huffington Post, and VentureBeat. His book is called Love's Compass: How Do You Recover After a Lost Relationship? Angus, thank you so much for being a guest on the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast.
My pleasure, Daniel. Thanks for having me.
Angus, you are an expert in leadership. So let's start there. And how would you describe your leadership style? How did you develop it?
My leadership style is more of a model type approach. First step is I show you. And the next step is we do it together. And the next step is you do it and I watch. And the next one is you do it and tell me how it went. So a lot of the approach that I take is as a result of some of the learnings I had from running my own business and failing miserably. And then transitioning to go to work for Starbucks and learning systems-based approach. And when I left Starbucks, I got into nonprofit and started implementing systems and leadership there. And now I work with corporate innovation. So learning how to lead by influence and not by authority or bureaucracy, which sounds altogether ironic when you talk about corporate. And right. I know in education, it's quite similar.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, what you described there, the model approach to leadership is very similar to an instructional approach called the gradual release of responsibility. And it's, you're the expert, so you're showing, you know, people how to do it. Then you're giving them a little more autonomy. They practice and, you know, eventually they're doing it on their own with your feedback.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you know, it's one of the things that a lot of people struggle with is because most of us were control freaks and we think we know it all. And especially when you deal with an education, because as an educator, as a leader in admin or, you know, the administrative sector, you're used to being in charge and you're used to, you know, telling people what to do. So now you bring a newbie on. And the ability to show grace, the ability to show patience, and the ability to give permission to fail sometimes gets forgotten.
So how do we cultivate that space, that permission to fail, that grace, like you're talking about, especially when we are used to being in control and given those type of, orders, so to speak?
I think a lot of it is actually internal. It's not something that you can, like, offer another curriculum amongst your, you know, continual learning courses. It's something where people have to kind of have a revelation on that for themselves. And what I mean by that is simply emotional intelligence. Most of us are not as self-aware as we think we are. We love our own chaos. We love the power we create. And we love to wield that as often as possible. Again, we kind of have these weird nuances and neurosis in each and every one of us. However, when you get to a place where you allow yourself the same permission to make mistakes, that you give yourself that same amount of grace, because when you are patient with yourself, when you can look in the mirror, respect, love, and honor the person that you see, it makes it far easier to be able to do that with other people. I like to say that there's, you know, two ways that we set as the focus of our lives. We either look at the past or we look at the future. In the past, it can be positive or negative. We can have things that happen that, you know, maybe something that's detrimental, someone that told you you weren't good enough, something that might have been shameful, something that was painful. And we look at that and make that an excuse as to why I'm not going to give up control, as an excuse as why I'm not going to grow, as an excuse for fill in the blank. Or something awesome happened, Daniel. It was amazing. Do you remember the good old days? Remember when we had reports that did this? Remember when we had teams that did that? Remember all that awesome stuff?
Yes.
Couldn't we just get back to that?
Right.
So that's the past. Or we look at the future. Man, when we get that new funding, man, when we get that new building, man, when we get those new computers, then things are going to work. Then we're going to be happy. And it's never ending. Because you'll get one thing and you still have got broken systems. And then you got the next thing and then the next thing because it's never going to satisfy and never going to fulfill. At the same time, professionally, you're looking to the left and to the right and you see other schools, other administrations, other people in your role succeeding in their journey and it diminishes your own. Instead of being in a place where you can be present, accept where you're at and what you're capable of doing today. And there's an acronym to the word today that says it's the only day that's actually yours. The only day actually yours. This is the day you can do something about. And when you see it that way, you can see that your leadership and your guidance to those around you can either bring a contagion of good, of positive and empowering, or of negative, bitter, condescending control.
That is powerful what you just shared there. I love that acronym today. I hear the idea of self-awareness too used quite a bit, especially in leadership podcasts. I'm asking this for myself. I want to grow mm-hmm. in my own self-awareness, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think it is growing. I don't want to fool myself and believe that I've already arrived and that, you know, I'm a level 5 leader already. I want, you know, hopefully I can get there. But
right.
Do you have any practical steps of somebody who's hungry like me that wants to honor his people, to show grace, be empathetic, use that emotional intelligence, like you said, you know, what are steps that I can take? What are practical things I could be doing right now to cultivate that?
Sure. So I believe life is all based in paradox. And in paradox, if you want to have friends, you first have to be friendly. If you want to truly gain, you first have to give. If you want to live, you then have to die. Areas of your life have to be done away with. And in that paradox, oftentimes we can connect to the fact that the more we learn about ourselves, the more we learn about others. I am a big fan and proponent of assessments, whether it be Myers-Briggs, whether it be DISC profile, Colby A index, strengths finders. All of those things are really powerful to give you an understanding of yourself. But the problem is most people, again, in their chaos of narcissism, they stop there. And then again, that defines them. You don't understand. I'm an extrovert. This is just the way I am. I'm an ENFP. Of course I'm going to light up the room. This is just what I do. You want me to be in charge of data? You want me in charge of details? No way. It's not an ENFP. I don't have to learn that. That becomes limiting.
Gotcha.
The paradox of that is, the more you learn about yourself, the more empowerment you have to others, because now character will always override your typical assessment or your typical personality. And if you have character and you respect and honor the people around you, what happens is you now transition your strength into a capacity to serve. And now in a moment where I might be really, like for me, I'm an EFP, that's why I use that example.
Right, right.
My personality walks in the room and I am like, hey, I'm like, you know, the life of the party. And I get around somebody and now I can sense that someone is not. They're introverted and they're more calm and they're more thoughtful. Now all of a sudden I can position myself that when I present to them, I approach them in a way that best they receive communication. So now I am more patient and I talk in a lower tone and I deliver facts and figures in order to support my conversation because that's what's important to them. Character always overrides personality.
So I hear you saying is it's a journey inwards. to understand yourself, and then really understanding your audience after that and giving them what they need. We had a great guest on here, Steve, and he founded a company called Stoke.org, but he called it the Platinum Rule, to treat people how they want to be treated.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I hear you saying. And it's, I love speaking to high quality leaders like yourself, because there's so many of these themes that just keep popping up.
Right.
And I feel like those are promptings, you know, maybe even a faith component where it's like, you know, pay attention to this, buddy. I'm trying to tell you something.
Right. Yeah. And true that, you know, and then what's the old Buddhist thing is when the student is ready, the teacher appears.
Yeah. That's so good. It's very, very interesting. We were talking about some nice things there. I don't want to let you off the hook too easily. I'd love to go into your worst leadership mistake, or one of the worst.
Mm-hmm.
And what did you learn from it?
My worst leadership mistake would have been early 2000s. And I was running a nonprofit organization. And it was one that my brother and I had founded. And we were trying to do a good thing in the city we were at, trying to help young people. And it was an arts-driven youth center. So we're teaching kids graphic arts. At the same time, we were doing concerts and poetry slams and jazz nights. And we were serving coffee, which helped to underwrite some of the nonprofit, you know, funding. So in all of that, what happened was I tied my identity into the work. And when we started to struggle, particularly in 9/11 hit and funding started to get tight. Secondarily, we made some bad business decisions on a music festival, and we lost $72,000 in one weekend. And now I was going to prove to the community, to our funding, to the other nonprofits, to my family, to my wife, that we were going to make this happen. We can do this. So I worked harder, and I became a workaholic. In the pain of all that and in the stress of carrying all of that, I turned to pornography. And from pornography, I turned into alcohol. And I combined the two, and now I'm promiscuous as well. I'm suffering underneath my own narcissism and my own sense of control, because I got this. And I dare not share it with anyone else. I didn't delegate. I didn't come clean. I didn't get honest. And I didn't get help. I lost my marriage. I lost the business. I lost my self-worth. And I lost my passion. And I spent the next 3 years of my life trying to put all the pieces back together again. And eventually I got to a place where I finally got the courage to go see a counselor. And in that counseling, I started to articulate some of the things that were in my thought process. And as I did, I started to see the reality of my own chaos, that I was creating so much of this pain out of validating thoughts and beliefs I had about myself. And it was through that context that I realized all of the errancy of the way that I was treating myself and those around me. That became the worst leadership failure of my life. And ironically, it's the one I'm most grateful for too.
That's a powerful story. I really appreciate you being vulnerable and sharing that. There's a lot of lessons to be learned there. I don't even know then how you get to a point to be able to reach out to a counselor, a therapist to ask for help. You know, I see one at least once a month, sometimes more, because I just know that I need it, you know, to get out of my own head, to process all those things, like you said, your errancy, and, you know, just have that objective feedback, right, to get probably back on the path, because left to my own devices, I often stray, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, and here's the thing is, we think we're in control. We think that we know it all. And, I mean, educators are probably the worst.
I mean, yeah, we're terrible, I think.
You know, and it just, you know, in full transparency, like, oh my gosh, my wife, she worked with a college. She was a director of enrollment, and the level of, you know, I'm trying to be respectful, but there's a level of where the bureaucracy that is in place ends up contradicting the actual purpose of which it's there to serve.
Yeah, absolutely.
And instead of helping students, it actually robs them and hinders them of the opportunity to become who they're capable of becoming through the leadership of the people who are supposed to take them there.
Yeah, it's crazy how that exists. You know, by the time this airs, I'll have moved on. But, you know, I served in Chicago Public Schools for a while, and I'm thankful for that experience. It was challenging, but I learned so much about myself and how to lead, you know, in a vast urban environment, you know, third largest school district in our nation. But the bureaucracy, you know, there's so many examples. One I want to share that's the easiest is we wanted to work with Stanford, who was doing a whole bunch of great work, right, with the growth mindset and Carol Dweck.
Mm-hmm.
They had a free, so let me repeat the cost again, a free program in, by the way, a district that is completely broke, a free program to work with kids on their mindsets to help them cultivate ones where they see themselves as successful, you know, to get out of that fixed mindset that they can't do, that they can do, and that they can learn from failure. Is a component of it was a research part, obviously, but then they had interventions that was the curriculum that we can give the kids to teach them the growth mindset. It was approved by Stanford, which is a pretty good university from what I hear. Their IRB approved it. It had no problem, right, that the research goes through. And it made it to our district, and it got denied. And they wanted so many changes to the research study that Stanford said thanks but no thanks. And it's just a perfect example of this incredible program that was already shown results in urban districts all over the nation, but we couldn't give it to our kids who needed it the most.
Because somebody's role probably would have either looked bad or been compromised.
I think the cynic in me, or I don't know if it's a realist, or if I'm just being curious. Let's say I'm being curious because that's positive. A component of it was looking at students' grades, and I wonder if it would be in our best interest to keep, you know, a tight lid on how kids are performing. The most ironic part about it is that my school is a top 10 school in the state. So it's incredibly high performing. But either way, it didn't get through, and it was just, it really broke my heart. It really did.
Yeah. Yeah. And we see that system in leadership, not in education only. I mean, that's not exclusive. We see that in, I mean, political circles right now, it's just, you know, a crazy fest. We see that in religious circles. We see it in so many realms where leadership is built on power, politics, and there's another P in there, and I can't remember what it is. But basically, you know, having a position, right?
Gotcha, yep.
And the things that used to be really powerful, the things that we revere great leaders for, we rarely see it today. We don't see someone who has character and values, someone
integrity,
who is unwavering, right? We don't see that. We don't see somebody who has been consistent about a belief system ongoing. We don't see somebody that is about serving. We don't see somebody that's about empowering and delegating and making contagious the philosophy or thought that they are bringing to the world to do good.
Yeah, it's frustrating, that's for sure. And wow, yeah, I don't want to share too much about personal.
But that's you know that, and I know we're pontificating on our own personal views, but that's the thing. I'll take the heat, so I'll be your guest and I'll riff. That's the whole reason why I started my podcast, Up in Your Business. It was twofold. One was the business savvy and acumen and introducing, you know, leaders from that perspective. But also the other side is the phrase itself, getting up in your business, right?
Yeah, I love that
title.
Is,
right? Thank you. The psychology and emotional elements necessary for quote-unquote success. And those are the things that I'm trying to build to make a contagion for other people. I just got a contract, and Daniel, you're like the seventh or eighth person that even knows this. My book just got accepted by a New York publishing house with Morgan James.
Congratulations. So,
thank you. I'm pretty excited about it.
Yeah.
So it's called Empowering Work, and it is all about the oncoming onset of what corporations are going to look like in the next few years. All the data is pointing to them hiring less and instead being able to leverage their workforces on an ebb and a flow or a growth or shrink because of the on-demand type of elements of the labor force. It's the gigification of so many roles. And how is our education system prepared and positioned to be able to address that? That's for you to answer, my friend. I don't have the answer to that one. But I can tell you the fact that we take 2 years to develop a curriculum while my daughter's trying to learn marketing in a field that marketing itself is changing. I mean, 2 years is a long time in the area of marketing for social business marketing and data and analytics, et cetera.
Well, in 2 years, it's already gone out of style. You know, it's no longer relevant. If you wait in that long, it's way, way too long.
So the systems are kind of tweaked, and then this book is going to speak to how do you give the it's going to talk about both the challenges, you know, and the opportunities, the threats and opportunities on both sides of the equation, from the employee side and from the corporate side. And then underneath it all will be this element of the need for emotional intelligence, that people are going to have to learn how to get along because they're going to have to work with each other in ways they've never done before.
Yeah, it's very interesting, you know, and I try to, you know, think about the future of schools. We've got to somehow figure how to make them more agile, how to remove a lot of those barriers. Like you mentioned earlier, they're working against what we need to do for kids. Everything is moving so slowly, and we want to prepare our kids for success, you know, in being productive members of our society. But on some level, right, we're just moving so slow, it's like almost irrelevant.
Can I ask you a question?
That scares me. Yeah, go ahead.
So this is me just from my own curiosities, and it's more rhetorical than it is anything else. But I'm just pontificating. Why is it that we measure our children and their education according to their performance, and in our leadership, we give tenure and no longer measure them on the same?
Yeah, that's a good question.
We reward our students on excellence and performing at high levels and capacities, and then in the leadership above it all, particularly in higher learning, we don't do the same. And that's coming from someone whose wife worked in that space for years.
Sure.
That's my beef.
Yeah. Yeah, I understand. I mean, we see it higher ed, secondary ed, elementary ed, you know, all around. And there's good and bad to it. And I want people to have open minds to even have a discussion around that. And I don't think we're at a place for that. I mean, we were talking about the political craziness too. And it's the same type of thing as a society. Like, why is it that we dig our heels in the sand instead of really coming to the table and one-on-one, understand the opposite person, the opponent, for example, their point of view. And then one thing that we've really lost, I feel like, in our country is the idea of compromise. So it's not that your way is always right. You got to give up some, but you're going to gain some within that compromise. So here's the better conversations.
Yeah, absolutely. And though I sound cynical about all that or whatever, I see great opportunity for people within the system to rise above the fray, to change the conversation, and to be the change. That's the invitation in the midst of it all.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I stole this story from Zig Ziglar. I shared it on Snapchat. Are you on Snapchat by any chance?
I am, but man, it's hard to stay on top of everything. It is a very manic experience.
Yeah, it's so good. But I stole this from Zig Ziglar over the top, and he shares this story of a grandfather and his grandson, and they're walking along the beach, and he picks up a sand dollar and he throws it back in the ocean. The grandson says, "Well, what are you doing that for, granddaddy?" And he says, "If I don't throw this sand dollar back into the ocean, it'll die. It's a living organism. Out on the sand, in the sun, it's going to bake to death." And so they go along walking down the beach a little bit more, and the grandson sees there's thousands, literally thousands of sand dollars. Like, well, you can't save them all. Like, what's the point? And the grandfather kneels back down, grabs one more sand dollar, throws it into the ocean. He tells his grandson, "It matters a whole bunch to this one." Mm-hmm. And that's the idea. Like you said, be the change you want to see. We can't get so overwhelmed by the corruption or the inefficiencies of these big systems that work and then give up.
Mm-hmm.
If we do that, I mean, nothing is going to change. But in your classroom, right, in your school as the principal, in the district if you're superintendent, you can make a whole lot of change if you start with yourself.
So true.
So speaking of ourselves and how we can develop, I want to transition to how to take care, how to practice self-care. You wrote a really excellent blog post I enjoyed called Do You Practice Kindness to Yourself? Mm. And in that post, the core idea is, right, that we often can't receive compliments. We invalidate, like seriously, Angus, you're a great guest. I am enjoying talking to you. You have so many wonderful insights. And based on that post, it might be hard for you and hard for our listeners to sometimes receive those encouraging words and compliments. Why is it so hard, and how do we fight against that?
So it kind of goes back to that whole thing we were talking about before is, you know, who's that person in the mirror, right? What do you think of that person? And that's kind of the beginning of it all is, you know, do we love ourselves? We are our own worst critics, and we're so busy comparing ourselves to others and, you know, the systems in place. And furthermore, our culture isn't really helping. You know, when you look at the fact that media, whether it be film, whether it be, you know, internet, or whether it be, you know, just the magazines on the rack while I'm in line, the thing that they reward is perfection and beauty and power. All of the world is slated against us to put us in our place to make us feel less than. It does not have to be that way, and yet we've accepted it, internalized it, and made it our own script. And so some would say to step out from under that, you know, it becomes impossible because of my fear of failure, to which I would state it's actually quite altogether different. I would say it's your fear of success. Hmm. We don't think that we are capable of becoming the person we know we are to be in order to accomplish the things we see in our hearts we are to accomplish. And so for us to see ourselves as great, to see ourselves as wonderful, to see ourselves as powerful is completely contradictory to the scripts we've already told ourselves that we've bought hook, line, and sinker from the surroundings around us. And until you step out from under that, and this is part of that revelation of self-awareness, where you accept and own your present being where you are today, growing in gratitude, growing in contentment and satisfaction and fulfillment, all of a sudden you're full of joy and happiness, and people want to be around that. Daniel, you know you like to be around happy people.
Love it.
Right?
Yes.
So from there, all of a sudden, more things become possible, opportunities present themselves, and people find you as charming and kind because when you get around them, you have nothing to gain, nothing to prove. And all of a sudden, it opens up something that otherwise didn't exist. I love the quote from Marianne Williams. What is it? Marianne Williamson.
Williamson, yep.
And when she says that our deepest fear is not that we are inadequate. Our deepest fear is that we are powerful beyond measure. It is our light, not our darkness, that most frightens us. We ask ourselves, who am I to be brilliant, gorgeous, talented, and fabulous? Actually, who are you not to be? You are a child of God. Your playing small does not serve the world. There's nothing enlightened about shrinking so that the other people won't feel insecure around you. We are meant to shine as children do. We are born to make manifest the glory of God that is within us. It's not just in some of us, it's in everyone. And as we let our own light shine, we unconsciously give other people permission to do the same. And as we are liberated from our own fear, our presence automatically liberates others.
I love that quote. Believe it or not, when I was a younger teacher, I had a class of sixth grade, just boys, and it was a class called AVID. It was all about preparing them for college. 12-year-olds. I made them memorize that quote, that poem, and they had to, that was fourth grade, but the whole year, they mm-hmm. stood up and greeted me at the beginning of every class with that poem, because the meaning behind it, the impact, it just the self-care, the belief in yourself that you're going to be successful, I wanted that to be with them for their life, and it was... I don't know. I thought I was crazy when I was first doing it because they're only 12, but they proved me wrong. And you know, by the end, like they were so proud that they could do that.
Yeah, yeah. You know, there's a new study, and I wish I could remember it. I want to say it was in The Atlantic where they were talking about the new students that they are trying to bring in and how they are, what kind of qualities that they're now seeking. In the past, they've always sought people who had, you know, a quest. They had, not perseverance, I forget the word, but, you know, the ambition.
Gotcha.
And they've kind of stepped away from those traditional ways that we saw leadership. And now, the way that they describe it is they're looking for students who are cool under pressure, who can connect with their peers, and who live a life that inspires those around them. And I thought, coming from Harvard, how unique is that?
Right. Yep.
That even they are sensing there's a change and a switch in how to influence those around you. It's not about power. It's not about politics. It's not about control. Ambition's one thing, but it's narcissistic in its entirety. And instead, can you be ambitious to do good, to bring about a movement, and to bring about the best in those around you?
Yeah, that seems to me to be connected to empathy too. You know, you talk about gratitude, empathy, just the importance of seeing from another's perspective and really trying to honor or serve them. You know, I love that Gary Vee, he's a polarizing guy, but he has a quote that he wants to bring 51% to every relationship. And I like the heart behind that of trying to always give before you receive. How do we cultivate those skills, especially if it's foreign to us?
So you are what you hang around. Jim Rohn says that the difference between who you are now and who you are in 5 years is found in the books you read and the people you associate. If you have a desire to be something different, go read the books that talk about people who have done different. Go hang around with people who are at a higher echelon that challenge you, maybe smarter than you, and maybe more forward-thinking than you, in whatever fashion of that role that you're trying to get to. The other component to that, I always say, is that what you hear about, you think about, you think about, you talk about, what you talk about, you bring about. So by exposing yourselves to these learnings of other books, other YouTube videos, Udemy, you know, on and on, or on the other side.
Don't forget podcasts.
Podcasts, come on, come on. Or this other side is the relationships and who you're exposed to, people that you've given permission to ask you tough questions, people that that cause you to rise up, that cause you to go beyond yourself and beyond your fears. All of a sudden, things change internally because that's what you're hearing. And once you start hearing, you start thinking and you'll start questioning, can I do that? I read the book by John Eldridge called, it's escaping me right now, but it'll come to me. In it, he says, every man struggles with the question, do I have what it takes? And if you can get your mind to wrap around these new things being exposed to you and seeing yourself in light of them, and these are affirmations that I used to do when I was in the rest, in the midst of my stuff, I would write with a dry erase marker on my mirror in my bathroom. So it was the first thing I saw in the morning, the last thing I saw at night. These affirmations would say in first person, present tense, these affirmations about what I was capable of, what I was doing in my life, and who I really am. And when I internalized that over and over, eventually it started to take root inside of me. And what takes root inside of you always seeks equilibrium with what's outside of you. Which is why if you have chaos inside, you will create chaos outside, even subconsciously. But if you have good and power and love and joy and peace internal, you'll create it to the external. When you see yourself as influential internally, you'll become influential externally.
Was that Wild at Heart, do you think?
That's the one, Wild at Heart.
Gotcha. Yeah, I read that one years ago too. That's a classic, so definitely recommend that for our listeners.
Yeah, and I love it because, yeah, it's got a faith principle to it, but man, the essence of that is absolutely enriching.
Let's pause here for a message from our sponsor. Today's show is sponsored by KickUp, a professional learning data analytics company that provides an easy-to-use platform, helping school leaders optimize their PD resources and efforts by soliciting and synthesizing teacher input on professional development needs, creating an intuitive and simple dashboard so leaders can take immediate and informed action to support teachers, measuring and reporting the impact of the PD efforts over time. Schools, districts, and charter networks leverage KickUp's platform and consultative support to synthesize data so that all stakeholders, administrators, coaches, and teachers can monitor progress, identify meaningful professional learning actions, and demonstrate and share impact. Learn more at kickup.co. Today's podcast is sponsored by the What Great Educators Do Differently Conference on October 14th and 15th in beautiful Kansas City, Missouri. Let me give you two reasons to attend. There's visionary presenters at each What Great Educators Do Differently Conference. You'll learn from a dozen or more presenters who are recognized nationally and internationally as among the foremost educational thinkers in the field. There's also connection opportunities. In addition to learning from presenters who are accomplished educational trailblazers, each What Great Educators Do Differently conference has time built into the schedule for a mini unconference, allowing intentional time for attendees from all over to network and discuss issues in which they're interested. You can learn more at WGEDD.com. Leading a school may be the most difficult job in the world, but what if I could guarantee that you could accomplish so much more in 1 year than you've been able to in any years past? The secret is to stop leading in isolation and to do so in community. The solution is to join one of my education masterminds. We meet weekly for an hour and discuss leadership and solve complex problems. Text Better Mastermind, that's all one word, to 33444. That's Better Mastermind to 33444 and start your journey to your best year ever. Now, back to the show. So I didn't prep you for this question, but you know, you can handle it. I know that for sure. I'm so impressed by the companies you speak to, like Walmart, Whole Foods, Coke, BMW. What goes through your mind, Angus, as you are pulling up to their, you know, facility and you're about to go in and I'm guessing lead them through some type of workshop or give some type of keynote, whatever you're there to do? What's going through your mind and how are you getting ready for that day?
So if you asked me that question today, it would be a very different answer now today that you're asking me it than if you had asked me that 2 years ago. Because I think what you're pointing or what you're kind of cajoling there is the essence of imposter syndrome.
No, I'm really just curious. I'm really just curious what goes through your mind.
Really? So I used to get, but when I just started all this, I got super intimidated.
Why is that?
I can remember the first time I spoke at a university. And one of the dean of students was in the back of the room with his arms crossed. And I thought, gosh, I'm really blowing this. This guy, he's not giving me, yeah, not a smile. He just, you know, kind of, and he had a stern look on his face. Like his eyebrows, you know, were kind of pinched in the middle. And when I got done, he came up and he shook my hands and he said, can I write a letter of recommendation for you? And I was kind
arm
of like,
cross guy.
Threw me, you know, to the side, just tossed me to the side. I'm like, yeah, sure, that'd be awesome.
Of course he did, yeah.
And he said it was one of the top 10 speakers he had ever had on the campus. Turns out he was processing the things I was saying, and I perceived that as him being critical, which was another essence of my own judgment about what I deliver.
Yep.
Now, flash forward, I'm going to these schools and to these companies, and one of the first companies I went to was Walmart. So we're not talking Fortune 1000, Fortune 500, we're talking Fortune 1. And I was so overzealous, I oversold myself. You know, I was just like hyper, you know, kind of like little, you know, hamster on crack. And I was like, right? And I was just coming out of my skin. I was excited. I was nervous. I was compensating.
Right.
Go about 9 months after that, and I'd spoken to other executives, other companies. And now I was sitting in a room, and there's a CMO from 3M. There was a CMO from Unilever. And I found myself realizing, A, they're just as human as I am. And B, I got more and more confident that the things I deliver are powerful. And now all of a sudden, my confidence level is huge. So I was last week in Munich, Germany, and I was at BMW, and I was opening the segment. And instead of me going into corporate speak, I came out with a bag full of tricks.
Yeah, high quality.
And in those in that bag were all these touristy gadgets that I had found while I was actually a tourist for the 3 days prior to the event. And I pull out this little refrigerator magnet because of a trip to this place, and I pull out this thing because of the thing I went to this place. I pull out this little beer stein, you know, because it's Germany and they drink lots of beer. And then I pulled out this thing I got when I was in Salzburg. It's a little Austrian hat with pigtails on each side of it. Everybody's laughing. They're pulling out their phones. They're taking pictures. And I said, I was a tourist for the last 3 years. And let me tell you, when it comes to innovation, many companies are tourists about innovation because they're not willing to engage in creating history that others would come to see. Will you choose in this next day to consume the information we're going to bring to you, that you would stop being a tourist and instead engage the process yourself? I now come into these situations knowing that I can bring people to a place of decision and action in ways I never could before. And the only reason why I was able to do it is because I've been able to expose myself to the very things that scared the spit out of me. Every time you walk into an opportunity for fear is an invitation to rise you up to a new echelon. Joseph Campbell said that in the cave you fear to enter holds the treasures that you seek. We all want change. We all want growth. We all want maturity. We all want, you know, advancement. But the things that it takes to get us there are the very things that intimidate that the tar out of us. Those are those fear factors. And that's where we kind of started this whole conversation, Daniel, is getting to that place that we will lean into that fear as an invitation to rise. That failure is not the end. Failure is a lesson learned. Do not fear making the mistake. Fear not taking the opportunity. Fear having the regret. Fear looking back in your twilight day saying, I really wish I would have. You have one life to live. It's today. Only day actually yours. What are you going to do with it?
It's a good challenge to you, listeners. I hope you got woken up by that. And what are you going to do, especially as a leader of a school? We talked about the challenges earlier, some of the frustrations, but the opportunity of what's on the other side, what you could do for kids and communities, how you can change family trees. There's no better job than what we do. And just want to encourage people to really go out, go into work tomorrow, today, or whatever you're listening, and give it your best shot. The kids deserve it. You deserve it. And you can make just a tremendous, tremendous impact in your communities. You know, the interesting thing, I'm reading Creativity, Inc. Have you ever read that, Angus?
I have not.
It's a story of Pixar and how they started up, and Ed Catmull, the CEO, you know, wrote it. And he talks about how obviously at Pixar, making all those animated films, Toy Story, Bug's Life, you know, all the good stuff, how they have to really create an environment where failure's okay, right? Because you learn from your mistakes. You can't be creative if you're fearing failure. And he talked about how a lot of times his people had learned it right in school. Because if you fail on a test, you know, do poorly in class or whatever, it's because you weren't prepared, you didn't try hard enough, and on and on and on and on. So I want to pose this to you. How could we unteach fear of failure? Like, how can we make it safe for kids and adults to take risks, do you think, in schools? Especially because you've been connected to education your whole life, you know, with your relationships.
You know, the only way I know how to do anything is to model. And in your teams, in your office, someone gave the illustration of the Arctic muskox. The Arctic muskox is the only species that, in the midst of danger, they turn hindquarters to hindquarters and they back up into a circle with the weak and the feeble and the young in the midst. And they have their horns and they have their intimidating shoulders and they face their adversaries and they protect one another. If you could do that with your teams and take fire if they make mistakes and say, no, don't blame them. They're under me. You want to mess with my bean, you mess with the whole burrito. And create an environment where your teams are given permission to experiment, to explore, and to innovate their departments in ways that have never been done before. And you lead the way by inviting them into the process. Most bureaucratic systems, education included, creates an environment that when someone makes a mistake, we tell them they made a mistake while we CC their managers.
Everybody, yeah.
Stop it. Your department ceases to do that today. Instead, if someone makes a mistake, you don't even do it through email. You can talk to them face to face and say, hey, is there something I can do to help you?
What?
Right?
How do you do that?
Go and talk to them and support them. And if it's something you can do something to correct, step in and make the correction for them before anyone else notices. Be a team that works with each other and for each other. The only way that you can bring transformation is to transform it yourself.
So besides Wild at Heart and Love's Compass, what are some books every principal should read right now?
Okay, so I'll throw you another curveball. Daring Greatly by Brené Brown. It is the power and principle of vulnerability and transparency. Laying yourself open to your teams and to the world and providing an environment for growth, inspiration, and collaboration.
Yeah, it's a great recommendation. Seen her speak twice at the Global Leadership Summit and just finished Rising Strong on audiobook.
Come on.
Angus, what do you do for fun?
Not a whole lot right now, unfortunately. I am working. So I have my day job with Crowd Companies, working with all my corporate life. And then on the side, I'm building my own company of coaching. And the podcast, of course, Up in Your Business. So those are really keeping me busy. However, the little brief moments that I have for fun, oh gosh, I married one of them and gave birth to the other. So I've got three kids and my wife, and I play with my family. We do things. And as though, you know, I'm busy, yes, but one thing that I will not do in my business that I did before, so I'll never put my family on the altar of my ambition. And so I'm very proactive and intentional. We bought season passes to the Nashville Zoo. We have season passes to the water park. We live within 15 minutes of two lakes. So we just pack up chicken and some salad, and we go down with some, you know, charcoal and some lighter fluid, and we fire it up at the lake. We keep it simple and keep it fun.
Those are the best times with family like that at the lake or at the zoo.
Mm-hmm.
So good for you. I love that about you.
Thank you.
So we have some would you rather questions from either.io. I either stole them or adapted them. Would you rather forget who you are or forget who everyone you know is?
I'd rather forget everyone I know, because I'm an extrovert. I'm going to go meet him again, and it'll be just all new and fresh.
Yeah, that's right. Perfect answer. Would you rather not know how to read or not know how to write?
Can you do both?
Got to pick one.
I would rather not know how... Oh, it's a tough one. To write. Can I still type?
No.
Dang it. I would say, okay... Okay, in this day and age, I'd rather not know how to read, because then I would just depend on videos, but I could still write, so I can express myself still.
Would you rather run someone over or be run over?
Depends on who it is, really. That's so bad.
But so true.
Oh my gosh, I think I'd rather be run over.
Would you rather be a carrot or a cucumber?
I don't even know what that question means.
I have no idea either. I just wanted to ask you and see how you'd respond. Good job. Correct. I meant to say correct. So Angus, listen, I'm proud of you. You've made it to the end. This is a big question, and I love asking people outside the industry, although you have deep experience in education. You're building a school from the ground up. You're not limited by your budget. Your only limitation is your imagination. How would you create the school if you're given a blank slate and unlimited resources? What would be your top priorities building the school?
My top priorities would be getting their parents involved in the education process. I would make it an open source educational system where people could use their own expertise and life experiences to be able to expose children to adventure, including travel. And I would also make it a year-round school so that education became part of a natural lifestyle instead of something that's only done during certain hours. I think some of the limiting facets of education is because we make it something that seems like a drudgery because of its separation from life itself instead of implementing it into life in general. That way, I think people can maintain a lifestyle of learning even beyond their diploma.
I'm going to congratulate you right here and give you Better Leaders, Better Schools extra credit. I'm going to phase that question out. One, it's been asked, you know, over 60 times. Personally, I'm getting a little bored. I'm guessing the audience is as well. But I have never heard anybody say that they would open source education. And I think that's a really amazing answer. Obviously, you know, the connections between what we do inside school, what we do outside school needs to be bridged. And I think that's equally brilliant. Mm-hmm. But I love, why not let communities speak into what we teach kids, mm-hmm. you know what I mean? Instead of just a policymaker saying this is what's most important for kids to learn.
Yeah, and consider the incentive of the parents themselves. How much would they want to share their stories? How much would they want to teach what they already know and what they've learned? It's powerful.
Yeah, and then that goes back to a long time ago we were talking about just how in 2 years, right, marketing, whatever, is going to be irrelevant. It has to be a lot quicker. Mm-hmm. If you're bringing experts into the schools and allowing them to speak into the curriculum immediately, then that would be a much more agile and flexible space.
Mm-hmm.
So Angus, listen, thank you so much for being a part of the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast. Do you have any parting words of advice, and what's the best way to get a hold of you?
Parting words of advice, I think I'll kind of echo something I said before, is the essence of two things that I've found in the people I work with and the influencers I've interviewed that seem to be commonplace is they're always talking about being self-learners, particularly with the executives I work in innovation. Most of those roles, probably 70 to 80% of those roles didn't even exist 10 years ago. People that are working in some of those roles that have MBAs from a decade or longer, none of it applies. The world is changing much faster than any of us can even anticipate. So to be on the top of your game, you have to be a lifelong learner, continually learning and getting better at your practice. It has to be a lifestyle. Second piece that I've learned from listening to these people is the fact that they've built deep and extensive networks. People don't find jobs anymore from a resume at all. They build them from relationship. Opportunities built from relationship. And so one essence of that, I would love to, as a gift, to give you a gift and to your audience. If you're listening and you think that networking is something that's slimy and schmoozy, I actually created an ebook called Networking with Effectiveness and Credibility. And it's all about offering value and serving. It's not about taking and getting. It's a very different approach to how you connect with people. And in particular, if you see yourself as an introvert and you think that networking is something you cannot do, I would say that introverts actually have more capacity to connect with people than extroverts do. And so I make that available to you. You can find that for download at angusnelson.com/ we'll do better leaders. So angusnelson.com/betterleaders. And you can download that for free.
Angus, thank you so much again. Better Leaders, thank you for investing in yourself today by listening to the podcast. Remember that life is 10% of what happens to you and 90% of how you react to it. Go out there today and be a better leader. Today's podcast was brought to you by Daniel and Angus. Be better starting today by heading over to betterleadersbetterschools.com and type Angus in the search bar. The show notes page will pop up. You'll get the highlights of today's episode, links to all the resources, including that free ebook on networking and the best way to connect. Angus, thank you, thank you, thank you for sharing your leadership insights and helping the better leaders be better.
Truly my pleasure, Daniel. Thank you.
Better Leaders, thank you for joining us on the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast. Visit us at betterleadersbetterschools.com, a blog and podcast made specifically for you to help you meet your leadership potential. Have you gotten value from today's show? Help me reach even more listeners by leaving a 5-star rating and review. Click the podcast artwork and press the Show Some Love link to leave an honest rating and review. A long, long time ago in a galaxy far away, patrons would sponsor artists to create something the patron valued. Would you consider becoming a patron of the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast? If you found this podcast valuable, if the show has pushed your thinking about leadership, and if you've benefited in any way, then I would be honored if you would become a sponsor. Sponsorship is easy. Head over to patreon.com/better or click the link in the show notes to become a patron for as little as $1 a month. If you pledge $10 a month, I'll send you one of my favorite leadership books every other month. That's patreon.com/better or click the link in the show notes. Do you have a question or need some leadership advice? I want to connect with you. I read every email, tweet, snap, that's sent to me. Links are in the show notes to connect via email and social media. Better Leaders, Better Schools is a proud member of the Edu Podcast Network, podcast for educators, podcast by educators. You can listen to more great education podcasts at edupodcastnetwork.com.